Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Hey, fam.
Hello, sunshine. Today on The Bright Side, we've got the brilliant mind behind some of the most unique ice cream flavors that we've ever heard of. Jenny Britton of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams is here with her secret recipe for success. It's Wednesday, April 24th. I'm Danielle Robay.
And I'm Simone Boyce. This is The Bright Side from Hello, Sunshine. Okay, Danielle, I've known you for, 8 months now?
Mm-hmm.
I still am not clear on this. Are you a hugger?
You're like, not clear?
I don't know. Are you physically affectionate with your friends? Does that make you comfortable or uncomfortable?
I am such a hugger. I'm such a cuddler.
Yeah, you're right.
I love it. That is with people I know. When people I don't know hug me, I get a little uncomfortable. Not women. Let me be clear. Men. When men I don't know
hug me.
Like do like a real juicy kiss on the cheek, I'm like, ooh! I don't know you, you know?
Juicy kiss on the cheek is never okay.
You grew up in Miami. Consent. All those guys do that.
Don't even get me started on the microaggressions from F-boys and men, okay? I mean, there's so many. Like, when you're, like, in a crowded place and they, like, brush their hand along, like, the small of your back.
That, it gives me the chills.
Excuse me.
I wish you could see her face right now as she's doing this. No, I don't like that. But from women, all the hugs, all the love, all the hand-holding, just call me Drew Barrymore.
Okay, this is great. This is great, Drew Barrymore, because, I mean, I'm a hugger too. I love physical touch from friends, and it can go a long way when we're feeling down, right? But now there's actually science to back it up.
What do you mean?
So, I came across this study that showed that getting a hug or a pat on the back right before you have to do something challenging can, in some cases, actually reduce your stress levels.
Mm, I get that. Sometimes I ask to borrow somebody else's nervous system. Like if I feel my, why are you looking at me like that?
I just have so many questions, but also that sounds so Danielle. Borrow someone else's nervous system?
It's real.
We're not there yet. Technology is not there yet.
No, I'm telling you, if you are really stressed, everybody feels it differently. I always feel stress in my chest. Some people feel it in their gut or their throat. But when I get that feeling of overwhelm, if I'm with someone I love, I'm like, can I just hug you for 10 seconds? Can you give me your nervous system?
That makes more sense, yeah.
And it calms you down.
Also, go outside.
Yes, if you don't have someone to hug.
Stick your feet in the grass.
For sure, but there's something about somebody else's skin and like heartbeat and I just want to borrow their nervous system.
Danielle just wants to wear your skin, no big deal.
Have you ever seen those videos on Instagram where like girls climb into their boyfriend's sweatpants and they're like, I just want to be close to you? That's me. Just want to be really close.
Great, good to know.
Are you not like that with Michael?
No.
Were you ever?
No, that's just not me.
Really?
No, it's not my DNA.
You hugged me when we first met.
Yeah, but I'm not like, oh, let me wear your sweatpants. I can be a close.
Wow, I feel personally attacked.
I mean, I'm just sorry. It's just not.
That's what I sound like?
No, that's what the TikTokers sound like, right?
Okay, whatever.
Moving on. Okay, so this study is actually really interesting. So the researchers at the University of Basel studied videos of 60 NCAA women's basketball games, and they were looking at what happens right before free throws. So they found that the chance that the player would score went up when their teammates gave them just a pat on the back. That's it. Or even just like squeezing their hand before they took their shot.
Huh.
Danielle, do you have any other physical touch hacks for confidence?
I don't know if I do. Just that I like a good hug, but I do like, I moderate a lot of panels or do like hosting events live. And if I know somebody in the audience and like we just kind of give each other a head nod or like lock eyes, that makes me feel more confident. So I do believe in the power of support in that way.
You know, the one that I really like, and this has been well-researched, is the superhero pose. Mm. You have to spread your legs out about, like, shoulder length apart, and you stick your hands on your hips like you're Wonder Woman. And something about it just, like, calms you down and instills you with confidence.
Does that really work?
I think it does.
That's cool.
I think it does. Okay, speaking of reducing stress, Danielle, I saw another article this week, and this one is about reading your partner's stress language. We know about love languages, but stress languages. This is interesting to me.
Very.
So stress languages is a term coined by author and wellness expert Chantal Donnelly, and she says that stress languages are all about the way that we react to and express our stress. So each person has a different way that this manifests, and it's important to understand how your partner reacts to stress so that you can better support them.
Same as love language. I love
that. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It feels like this is long overdue, like we've needed this language.
Yeah, I agree. Fight, flight, or freeze. We need a language for all of them. There's five of them, right?
Yes. So we have the fixer. And these are people who try to fix situations even when they're not invited to fix them. And they often wind up doing more harm than good. They cross boundaries. They're overbearing.
I know who this reminds me of, but I can't say it.
I know who this reminds me of, too.
We all know a fixer.
Oh, we know fixers.
Yeah.
Okay, there's also the denier. The deniers suppress and minimize negative emotions. So they're the type to think that the glass is half full, even when they're struggling, even when they're really strugs to funk.
That's tough.
And they just act like the problem doesn't exist.
I mean, I guess that's one way, if that works for you.
As I'm going through this, I want you to think about which one you are, okay?
Okay.
And I'll do the same. Okay, the next one is the number, and they tend to self-medicate with alcohol or other substances. Like, also using screen time or overworking can be a method of escape for them.
I know a lot of my friends do the screen time thing.
Yeah. I will say, I'm a former number. I'm a reformed number. Then we have the exploder. Exploders are aggressive, angry, quick to point the finger at other people. They can gravitate towards catastrophic thinking. They might storm off in the middle of a conversation, blame other people for their stress, etc.
I have always admired exploders.
You admire them?
I do. I think
why?
It's because I'm the opposite.
Okay, wait. The imploder is number five, and imploders internalize their stress, and they tend to spiral into self-criticism and shame.
Yeah, that's me for sure. I hold it all inside and then just have a good cry, usually in the shower or in my car. But I've always admired exploders because they just get it out of their system.
But like, an exploder's got to be really hard to live with, too.
I know an exploder. I've lived with an exploder and they feel better. But then the other person has to live with all their words for the next few days or maybe forever.
If we're being honest, like we all have moments where we are exploders. We have all exploded in certain situations.
Sure.
And then you have to also live with those things that you said while you were exploding.
Yeah. Although a lot of exploders like black out and forget what they said and just are like, oh, yeah, I got it out. I'm better now.
I'm trying to think which one I am. Definitely not a fixer. I'm probably a denier.
Really?
Yeah. I'm Miss Little Miss Toxic Positivity.
Little Miss. That's a good meme for you. What do you mean?
I really try to just push through and minimize and stay positive. I think part of it is good. You know, I think I developed it as a coping mechanism growing up as an only child, moving around so much, having to be strong in new environments.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a defense mechanism.
Yeah. Which one of these is healthy? I'm still unclear.
Yeah, I don't. Are any of them?
Which one should we be aiming for?
I also feel like similar to love languages, you can be a little bit of a few.
Exactly.
Like, I think I'm a little bit of a denier, a little bit of a fixer.
Chantal, tell us who we should be. Who are we supposed to be here? Because I'm unclear on that.
I would really like to know. Okay, here's what I'm curious about.
Yeah.
If you're out with somebody and you're realizing that you're in one of these stress responses.
Yeah.
Are you admitting it in person? Like if you're on a date, are you asking your date which stress response they are?
I think you should bring a printout and actually to make it interactive, just create some check boxes and like create a questionnaire and ask them to go through and answer it.
I should do that on my next date. I think I'll be really popular with all the guys. Maybe I'll ask them for their credit report right after.
Didn't somebody say that you asked too many questions on dates?
Yeah, I got feedback that the date felt like an interview.
I think you should double down. I think you should lean in.
Whose side are you on? Are you trying to get me married or are you trying to keep me single? My mom is gonna have to call you.
Oh,
I know
God.
Which side she's on.
After the break, we sit down with entrepreneur and literal tastemaker Jenny Britton, the founder of Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream. We're going to find out how her company went from one single scoop shop to a national ice cream sensation.
Dare I say we're getting the scoop?
Oh!
Stay with us. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb, too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on The Bright Side with entrepreneur, James Beard Award winner, and the person responsible for some of our very favorite ice cream flavors. Jenny Britton is here, aka the brains behind Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams.
You know, Danielle, Jenny started with a single scoop shop in Columbus, Ohio 20 years ago. But since then, she's built an empire with more than 80 scoop shops nationwide.
Wow.
And pints available at major grocery stores. You know you've seen them on your shelves. She's here to talk about what it took to get there and how she creates those delicious flavors that we can't get out of our heads or mouths. Welcome to The Bright Side, Jenny.
Hi, it's so great to be here. Love talking flavor.
Jenny, my freezer is full of your ice cream. I see your name almost every night when I open my freezer door.
I love that so much. You know, it's funny because when I see a woman's name on a brand, first of all, I usually reach out to her and say hello. So like Target, for instance, there are so many women founders in Target. But I honestly, like sometimes when I see those packages, I will wave through them to people. Like there's some energy in the universe where I can like speak to people through these packages. So I don't know, just imagine me on the other side when you see that like waving to you, saying hi.
Jenny, your ice cream hits different. To me, it's genuine hospitality in a pint. I love the way that you view this industry and ice cream through that lens of gathering and hospitality. What are some of your earliest splendid memories of ice cream?
Oh my gosh, that's so neat that you say that. I love it so much because I'm a Midwesterner and it really always is that sort of Midwestern tradition of coming together and serving each other. You know, it's funny that I put my name on my company. I did not want to do that. That is not something that Midwesterners do. We need to just hide because it's never about one person. And even at Jenny's, it isn't. But ice cream in the Midwest is like, and I think that's true of everywhere, but I mean, especially in the 80s and 90s when I was coming up, it's something that you do. It's like not a dessert. You know, a lot of times in the Midwest, we'll eat like cinnamon rolls before dinner. Ice cream was just something we did almost every night before bed. So we would actually have ice cream at my grandmother's house before bed. And that's probably my earliest memory. It was like this caring, loving thing to do. It's a ritual almost of care, which I think is so beautiful. And ice cream is that way. I mean, I always say ice cream is there for you whether you win the game or lose the game. And it does. It makes you feel better no matter what.
You've been creating ice cream flavors for more than two decades, and the names and the flavors are so unique. There's Fluffernutter Pie, Maple-Soaked Pancakes. The one that I crave the most is Brambleberry Crisp. Where do you come up with these?
I started in a public market, so I was making whatever flavors I wanted to and just listening to feedback constantly. So I would get some ingredients, I'd make the ice creams, and then I would give people samples. So I would just listen to feedback constantly. And when you do that for a decade, you get a sense of not only what you want and what you like, which is always, for me, it's always butter, caramel, peanut butter, brambleberries, because we actually picked brambleberries when I was a kid and made crisp out of it. But you know what you're adding to the world, but you're also listening to feedback. So you kind of get a really good sense of what you're doing and what people want. And I think that's true of whatever it is you're making. If you want to be an entrepreneur, to get as close as you can for as long as you can to your customers and just start playing around and then listen. Because you have to bring something new to it. If I had just started making all the flavors that people thought they wanted, like cookies and cream and mint chocolate chip and all of that, nobody would have come to me. People would have told me that's what they wanted, but ultimately that's not what would have built my business. And yet the first, you know, the early flavors that I was making probably weren't exciting enough either, you know? So it really was like, it kind of had to like evolve together.
You put all these ingredients in ice cream that I would have never thought of in ice cream. Like there's olive oil and just these ingredients that are so outside of the realm of ice cream.
Yeah, well, that comes from the farmer's market. Whatever was there became ice cream at some point, even, you know, fish and any cheese that the cheesemonger had or any wine or variation of some kind of spirit or, you know, anything that was in the market. And all of those beautiful merchants who were there every day, you know, and they knew everything about what they sold. When they got something new, I was always the first person they thought of. So I would trade, I would make ice cream out of whatever it is that they brought me, and then I would trade them for the product so that I could then sell that ice cream to my customers. I didn't have any money in the beginning at all. So a lot of it was just done on trade for years.
Sorry, I have to rewind. Fish ice cream?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it needs to be made or that it was, you know, the weird thing about ice cream is that it's surprisingly not bad. You can almost put anything in it. Like, and it's surprisingly not bad. But it took me really a long time, like years, to learn that that isn't good. You know, like just because you can make a smoked fish ice cream doesn't mean that it's delicious.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up.
Funny.
So you started an ice cream company before Jenny's called Scream, but it didn't work out. How did that experience shape you, and how did you find the grit to try again?
Well, everything that I know comes from what I learned at Scream. It's the foundation. I learned about seasonality of produce. I learned how to make ice cream. I mean, it actually took longer than I thought to learn that. All 4 years, I got good by the end. I thought I was good in the beginning. I wasn't, but I learned about how the market works, which is, I mean, in terms of like the farmer's market. So a rising tide lifts everybody up. We're in it together. If there's somebody failing over here and somebody super excelling over there, like we gotta like learn together. I learned everything. I learned about fellowship and finance in a very simplistic way, which is all you need to know in business to start. So Scream was everything, but ultimately it failed because I didn't know a lot. I also had a business partner that wasn't very into the business. I mean, we weren't doing very well, so it kind of makes sense. She had another business, but I was there every day and it was like all my ideas. And so when I closed Scream, I thought I was done forever because I had been the one working there every day. I had lived out of my car for 3 months.
Wow.
Like I was trading not just for ingredients, but also just for food to live off of. I really didn't have a safety net, but for some reason, I just didn't care. I was just on this cool adventure. So living in my little Chevette, I had a tiny little Chevette. I would sleep on my clothes in the back hatchback. There's a rich neighborhood in Columbus and they had the best trees. And I would park my car under those because I felt like maybe people wouldn't see me. But it was a safe neighborhood. And that was where I would spend the night. But I would like look at the stars and the tree above me. I felt very much on my own, but very in control and in of my destiny.
Wow. What were you after during that time? Was it the pursuit of ice cream or what? It seems like it was just something bigger.
So I had studied art and left art school to make ice cream. When I was in college, I actually wanted to be a perfumer. So I was studying art and a whole bunch of other stuff that I was just interested in. I went to Ohio State University, which is massive. And so you can really learn anything there that you want to. So it was hard for me to focus, but I wanted to get into perfuming. And it wasn't long after that I'd read all these books about ancient perfumers. And I realized that butterfat, or the fat that's in milk, is a perfect carrier of scent. Then I started to get things from the farmer's market, like rose petals or sweet basil, and actually steep them right in the cream. It was hooking up with the butterfat. So then it would like get frozen and then it would melt when you eat it. So once I started to work with that, I felt like there was a lot that I could do. If Ben and Jerry's did what they did with kind of like that stoner junk food, I mean, I'm a huge Ben and Jerry's fan to this day. Well, then I can do it in the other way, mm-hmm. you know, in this more like, just a better quality kind of way, and to put the emphasis on the experience of eating the ice cream.
You know, I was going to ask you a question about what you wanted to do differently, but I think that feels like that's what it was, is you just viewed ice cream in a different way than all these other companies did.
I was studying art, and because all of my friends were kind of like the punk kids hanging around Columbus, mm-hmm. and I was like, we would never go to one of those like old-fashioned nostalgic ice cream shops. So maybe I can make an ice cream shop that's like for my friends. So that also became that sort of like, well, you know, to find your market, you don't have to look that far. If there's something that you kind of love, but it's not being served by the people that you know and you relate to, you can kind of go after that, which is exactly what we have done.
We all know that saying, ego is the death of creativity. And yet I'm always confused as to how ego factors into entrepreneurship, right? Because all great innovators like yourself start by investing in their own ideas, believing in their own ideas. But then you have to engage in co-creation with your customers. So it's a give and take. What has entrepreneurship taught you about the difference between ego versus instinct?
Oh, gosh, what an incredible question. So yes, all of that. I mean, it is an act of co-creation. Building Jenny's was an act of co-creation. And in fact, my first store, I didn't realize that. And that's really the big thing that was the problem. I sort of thought of myself as the artist. And because of that, people weren't actually that interested in what I wanted to make every day. They wanted what they had last time, which I didn't have because I was interested in making something different all the time. And so when I opened Jenny's, it was like, I already knew what flavors people really loved that I was making before. And so I knew that those had to become like regular flavors. That's the thing that really made Jenny's versus Scream, is that idea of committing to what our customers loved out of the things that I was making. I think that there is this weird ego death in creativity, in that when any creative person puts themselves out there and says, I'm going to put my name on this, I'm going to stand for it, I'm going to stand for my ideas, it is the hardest thing you will ever. We all know that. I mean, you know, just even putting a post up on Instagram can be like, you have to get over yourself, because you have to get over that thing that tries to protect you from expressing yourself. And people think it takes ego to do that, but actually it takes ego to hold you back. Your ego is what holds you back from actually taking that step.
Jenny, you hit an unexpected bump in the road in 2015 with a listeria outbreak. That just seems so brutal to endure. How did you navigate that moment?
I mean, I think when something like that happens, the first thing you do is just pause and stare at the problem. You look directly in the eye of what's happening. We had done everything we thought we were supposed to do to prevent it. And then we got that call. And so that's the moment the world kind of stops for us.
Right.
We came together as a team very quickly. I had great people on my team. Just kind of regular people. We were just running this little company, but like we had just opened in LA too, literally like a month before. And we had this amazing collection of ice creams inspired by colors of the Matisse paintings. So this is like the highest moment we had ever achieved in the company. And a month later, we were worth nothing.
It took your company out that badly?
We needed money so much too at that moment because we were coming out of winter. So we were just waiting for any of those summer sales to come in, any of those spring sales.
So one of my favorite TED Talks is about the importance of grit in business. That to me just seems like such a huge test of grit. in hindsight, now that you're 9 years out of that experience, what was the most impactful learning from that?
Oh my goodness. We became the company we always believed we were after that. Because when you are hit with that kind of a challenge, and we could have made very different decisions than we made in terms of like trying to protect our company, and we chose to do the right thing instead at the risk of everything. I think that's actually, you don't know what you're going to do until you are presented with that. No one does. Mm-hmm. But when you get through it and you can look back and say, we actually are those people. That company is us. Nothing you can do in life can give you that but crisis.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about giving up?
Well, no, not in that. The interesting thing about this kind of deep existential crisis where you're just really like, is that the rules are different. You can fight in a way for what you believe that you wouldn't in other times of your life. And there is a weird creativity in that moment too. I don't want to say it's enjoyable. You would never wish it on anyone. It's so incredibly difficult. But actually, like during the crisis, there's creativity and passion. Mm-hmm. You're on fire. You're walking through it. You're getting through it. You're doing it for reasons other than yourself. It's the hard part actually comes afterward. When everything's kind of settled and you realize you just gave everything you had, then it kind of messes with you a little bit afterward.
Creativity and crisis, that's something that's going to stick with me.
Yeah, I wrote about it. I wrote a journal and I wrote about that. And yeah.
What was the journal entry like? Or what do you remember from it?
Well, it's like, you know, I was sitting there for so long trying to save the company, trying to come up with an idea. The rest of the team was all working on amazing projects. They were in the phone bank, manning the phone bank, which we had set up. They were working with the FDA and trying to get us through. There's so much red tape and all of this. And we were doing testing, and luckily we did not find more listeria, so that was very good. But we were trying to get the kitchen back up and running. But my job is to create new flavors, and I had no job anymore because we couldn't make ice cream. My job is to like connect with people. And so most of that stuff was like on hold for now. And I was just sat there thinking like, what can I do? And days, weeks, even months went by and nothing was like, I remember there was this blackness everywhere. I had nothing to hold on to, nothing to grab onto, not even a spark of an idea to carry me to the next stone or whatever. And then it was interesting because I got a call from an ice cream maker actually in California, in Napa. And he said, come make your ice cream at our plant. Can you do that? Can we help you? And I thought, that's amazing. What a wonderful human being. But no, we can't because it's too far away and it wouldn't actually work. And then another ice cream maker starts calling. This is actually just a couple weeks after the recall, maybe 6 weeks. And then another ice cream maker. And I tried to work with one of them or something and it didn't work. But that was like the spark. You know, you have to wait for that like shift in thinking. Mm-hmm. And then there, it comes.
It almost seems like another small ego death. In a way, like having to put to bed this idea of what you thought it should be. And then that opens up so much greatness on the other side.
It is mind blowing. Yeah, it really does blow your mind. I mean, it is an ego death situation for sure. Yeah, you get a lot of those as an entrepreneur, I think, you know, especially when your name is on it. I mean, it's a funny thing. It seems the opposite, but yeah, there's a lot of, killing your ego.
Tumbling to be in business is basically what it is. I'm always really interested and inspired by compassionate leadership. I've had enough bad bosses and good bosses to understand and see the difference. And my friend Steven runs a company called Flowers for Dreams in Chicago. And I
love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he had told me a story about you years ago. And so I texted him and I said, you know, we're going to be interviewing Jenny. And his response was, she really gave me an ear when I needed one. And I just thought that was such a characterization of who you are as a leader. Who gave you an ear? And did any of those conversations change the way that you do business?
It's weird because when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a founder, most people in your life you have to convince, because most people around you think that you are not making the right decision, or that you don't know what you're doing, or that you came from art school and you didn't go to business school, or that you're an Ohioan and you're not from New York, like whatever it is, you're a woman and not a very, very, very few people actually do care to listen and to get on your side and to support you. And I've only, I would say recently found that. And I have found people around me who are actually interested. And I know what it feels like now to be pulled up, to be allowed to expand into something I didn't know was possible for myself. Most of this in my life was on my own. And especially when you talk about being in the middle of Columbus, Ohio, which Columbus has a great community, a really incredible community. But for most of my life, I was very alone. All of the women in this city that were on the level that I was or where I wanted to go, they were like, you know, shoulder pads and pantyhose and high heels working at the law firms. That wasn't me at all. So I couldn't identify with them, you know? So I really will say that, like, for a lot of the time, it was out on my own. I had to believe in it. But I only recently got the support that I need, which is pretty cool. So I have a coach and an advisor for the last maybe 5 years. And those people are incredible. And I would say to any entrepreneur, the three people you need in your life right now are a coach, because being a founder is different than being an executive. You have different kinds of power. You have to know how to wield it in the right way in your company. It's hard to know. You need a business advisor. You just have to know what all the things about the board are, what the contracts are. You need somebody who's protecting you outside of your company and who's helping you understand. And then you need a really, really, really good lawyer from day one, you know? So anyway, it's funny. It's interesting. I think we're changing. You know, people are more open to listening now. And I certainly take every call I possibly can for emerging entrepreneurs. I'm always on phone calls with them. I'll have some more this afternoon.
It means so much when you're building something. I feel like you're part of that change.
We can all be so much more than we believe we can be. And sometimes when somebody else just sees that in you.
Is that kind of like when Gandalf saw something in Frodo that no one else saw in him? I just want to say, I've had so much self-control throughout this whole conversation because I am such a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I know you are too. And I've waited this whole time to get out my Lord of the Rings reference. I have a Lord of the Rings question I have to ask you.
Okay, great. This is like, I always say the Lord of the Rings is my favorite, movies is my favorite business book.
Yes, I've learned that you believe that. So is there a particular scene that inspires you as a business leader?
The one that constantly is in my mind is when Frodo like finally like throws the ring into the fire or whatever, you know, it's like, he's so bloody, you know, and he's so, that expression that he has, it just says everything. And it's exactly like, it's a metaphor. It's like what it feels like. Like I always talk about, like, instead of having a mission in the company, we have like this vision quest or mission quest sort of thing, just because I want to compare it to like what Frodo goes through. But there is a quietness, I think, in being an entrepreneur. And sometimes we're like on Instagram or out in the world, but most of our lives are just working and just trying to get that ring to Mordor. We never show like all of the incredible people who supported you.
Mm-hmm. The fellowship.
And it's not even just supported you, but like together we make something greater than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. So when I think about, I like the word company better than I like the word business. So company is a fellowship.
Yeah.
It's people who are all an important part of the mosaic to make one thing whole.
One last thing. There's a Galadriel quote that I think perfectly describes you and your perseverance. And that is, this task was appointed to you. And if you do not find a way, no one will.
Oh, I can hear her voice say it when you say that.
Right?
Yes.
So, Jenny, our minds are like gardens, and you've had such a vivid imagination since you were a little girl. You've talked about searching for fairies and nymphs in the forest, and you're constantly sprouting new ideas today. So what do you do on a daily basis to keep your mind ripe for creativity?
I shut everybody else out because it's too, the judgment and the opinions are too loud and the voices are too loud. And so I just go into my own place. And I live on a park and I go to the forest a lot. And those are sacred places for me. And I allow my mind to just wander. And I really do think that imagination can be therapeutic. So sometimes it's like, there's like active imagination. And then there's actually turning off your brain and just feeling, just radiating and feeling the energy of whatever it is that you're doing, especially in nature. And for some reason, that's also where ideas come from, when you stop thinking.
So you are an ingredient company and you have this flavor called sunshine, which is very on brand for us here at The Bright Side. Yes. And Hello Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
What are the ingredients for sunshine in your life?
So for me, like, because I was in a period of darkness, which I'm also not afraid of and I kind of like, I was like born under a Scorpio moon almost at midnight. So like I have those light and dark side of me, which is, I'm an optimist, you know, but like I'm rooted in both sides. But like, I don't know, the elements of sunshine. I mean, I just think of light, mm-hmm. you know, and it takes darkness. Like you wouldn't have light if there wasn't darkness, right? Mm-hmm. So it's that balance of forces.
Balance of forces and flavors.
The flavor was, and I don't even know, maybe I went too far the other way, because if you were just asking about the flavor, I mean.
I wasn't. I really wanted to know, like, what makes sunshine for you? Like, for me, it's like a dash of alone time, you know, a tablespoon of community, that, if I'm being corny, that type of a thing. I just wanted to know what it equaled for you.
Well, I love that. And in a way, like the ice cream, because it was the color of a storm cloud, but behind the storm cloud was the light. Mm-hmm. It kind of matches up with this idea of darkness and light, kind of stepping into the light, mm-hmm. which I think that's the sunshine. That's the flavor. And also for me, like what it represents.
The definition of wisdom is holding two opposite truths at one time. And I feel like you do that with your ice cream. It's light and dark. It's sweet and salty and all of those things.
Well, and it's also true of our company. Like, you know, it looks optimistic. It looks like it's bright and cheerful, but there's always a little shadow behind everything that we do. Like I said already earlier, like ice cream is there whether you win the game or lose the game. I think people don't realize how many people in the same line that they're in might be there because they're losing the game right now. And we are aware of that at Jenny's in a big way. And it's really what I think is so beautiful about ice cream. And I'm not sure how many other ice cream makers really think that way.
I don't think any of them. It's just you.
It feels very in line with your emphasis on localization.
Yeah. And I always say, like, anybody in America can start where they're at and build anything they can imagine. I think the most valuable resources you have as an organization are not the money that you build, but the community that you build and the people that come along with you. And of course, your own passion and the love that you create in the world and all of that. I mean, that's like unstoppable. That's like a force you can't really mess with.
For sure. You're founding another company soon. What can you tell us about that? Is this a pivot?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I was actually in New Jersey to work with another founder on a project that she needed some help with. And I've been on this big health journey for the last 5 years or so. And we started working directly with this produce company with all of their produce trimmings. So apple cores, watermelon, cantaloupe, honeydew, mango rinds, and then stems of like broccoli and cauliflower. Started fermenting them on site, dehydrating them and turning them into flour. And so we were just like, can we make something out of this? So we just made a whole bunch of things. We made an amazing pancake mix, a chocolate cake mix, cookies. And we settled on doing the first product to do a bar, a nutrition bar. That's just like a 12 plants, you know, prebiotic super fiber bar. That's just really, really good for you. And, but the company itself will be an ingredients company.
You're actually raising money through Kickstarter. And I'm sure a lot of people would think you're such a successful entrepreneur, you're way beyond Kickstarter at this point. So why are you doing it that way?
I like the idea of starting small. I want to start as direct as I can with people who will be our customers. I knew that I thought this was a good idea, but that's it. And so having so many people come out so quickly for the Kickstarter kind of proved the concept to me. So to me, it's a story we created together. And again, it goes back to we're co-creating this, and you have to have your people, your community, your customers, your potential customers there with you in order to really be a company. So it's just a humble way to do it. But to me, it's invaluable.
Jenny, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. This has been such a fun conversation. Thank you for having me.
Jenny Britton is the Frodo Baggins of frozen treats, the Jedi Knight of scoops, and the founder of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb.
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know about you, Danielle, but that conversation was everything I hoped it could be and more.
She's a really inspiring entrepreneur, and we touched on compassionate leadership. But there's a Shakespeare quote that some are born great, some achieve greatness, and others have greatness thrust upon them. And I kept thinking about that as she was talking. I think she's a little bit of all three, to be honest. She's a true leader.
I loved hearing her talk about how she navigated that tension between ego and openness as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
How her greatest moments of creativity came in times of crisis. When I look back at my life, I think that's true for me too. I think it's true for all of us.
Yeah, those moments of failure, hardship, they really suck when you're going through them. I call them crying on the kitchen floor moments. I've had a few since I started Pretty Smart. And they're not easy. But I do think that somebody said to me one time when I had a crying on the kitchen floor moment, they were like, welcome to the club. And I was like, what do you mean? And they said, this is the club of entrepreneurship.
Yes.
You are now inducted.
Yes.
Your tears are payment to get in, basically. And there's going to be a lot more. And it made me feel better. Like everybody goes through it.
And she really pulled back the curtain and acknowledged that it's never just about one person, that one person who builds a business, even though it's her name on the pints. Every self-made entrepreneur is still a community-made entrepreneur at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. No one does anything great alone. Anybody who says they do needs their ego checked.
Tomorrow, comedian and actress Dulce Sloan joins us to talk all about her journey to joy. You don't want to miss it.
And that's it for today's show. Listen and follow The Bright Side on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Simone Boyce. You can find me at Simone Boyce on Instagram and TikTok.
And I'm Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. Hit me up.
See you tomorrow, folks. Keep looking on the bright side.
Simone, you may not know this, but I have been bitten by the travel bug. This time of year, I crave the outdoors and the mountains and adventure. They're calling to me.
I mean, we were both in Austin recently for work and also having a time. And as soon as I got home, I was already on Airbnb planning my next trip, possibly this summer. And while I'm away, I'll be hosting my home on Airbnb.
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.